Last month, I spoke on a Wednesday evening, and many of you were there. And we looked at the idea of a legacy of leaving. And typically, when you talk about these kind of things, you talk about leaving a legacy. And this was kind of flip-flopped, and it's the legacy of leaving. And the idea is that our lives are just full of transitions. They're constantly changing. You know, you're changing where you work. Your children are growing up and moving out. You know, you're moving to a different location. But there's constant change. Our lives are fluid, and nothing stays the same for very long. And you know this. You know how things. You know, even when you think you're pretty well settled, you know, all of a sudden something changes, and you're moving in some way, shape, or form, and things are changing. And we need to think about the legacy of leaving, because we are constantly leaving things and moving on to new things. And we can leave in a very poor way, maybe in an angry way or a judgmental way or a very, very sad or depressed way, whatever the situation is. You can leave in a very poor way, or you can leave in a very positive way. You can leave full of grace and graciousness, and you can leave and really make memories and know that what you did made a difference. And we have that choice. We can choose whether to leave well or whether to leave not so well. And we looked at this, like I said, last month on a Wednesday night, and tonight we're going to kind of continue along that same theme, different, but, you know, kind of part two. And we're going to kind of start with a video, if it's ready, I'm hoping. My poor technology skills extend even to the sound room when I have the service. It's amazing. I just don't do technology well. So hopefully, there is a video that will sort of introduce this idea a little bit further. Here we go.
Some people really struggle with the discrepancies in the gospel books, and it's hard to dispute that they're there. Things take place at different times and in different orders. Some events that are included by some authors are left out by others. Some of my friends have shared with me how this is a serious place of doubt for them. But when I read the gospel, I get too caught up in the story to worry about the where's and the when's and the what's and the how's. And that isn't to say that I read it better, it's just to say that I struggle for other reasons. Thematic issues that make me wonder if that's really the way that Jesus wanted the story to go. The chief issue among these, for me at least, is the ending. See, despite all the discrepancies in the gospel books, all the endings feature a common event. They all end with Jesus leaving. And by leaving, what I mean is that the Jesus the disciples knew and had followed wouldn't be with them in the same capacity any longer as a walking, talking, breathing person. I think sometimes we become so familiar with that, so comfortable with that, we forget it didn't have to happen that way. That's the way that God chose. I mean, why couldn't have Jesus hung around for another 10 to 15 years after his resurrection, furthering his mentorship with his disciples, along with others, and sending them out like this well-prepared army before he ascended into heaven? This would have been so much easier on so many levels, but this isn't the way that it happened. Instead, Jesus lived until his early 30s, and then he left. His ministry was to be carried on by those who would come after him. This was Jesus' legacy, a legacy of leaving. And that's troublesome for us because for so many of us, leaving has such negative connotations. I remember when I was in sixth grade and my youth pastor left for another church, and I was crushed, man. I wasn't ready for that. And you probably have stories like that. At even greater degrees of severity, stories of divorce, parents leaving, friends leaving, stories that when we think about them, they give us that high and dry feeling of loss that cause us to balk at the idea that a legacy of leaving could be anything but bad for us. But I think that's because we don't do it right. Leaving, that is. I don't know that we understand how to positively participate in the necessary act of moving on. We associate this with failing or with giving up. This mindset has even crept into the way that the church views missions work. Some people think that retaining missionaries in certain world areas should be our goal, and we certainly shouldn't be okay with, let alone celebrate, when they leave. How much different would our mission and ministry endeavors look if we were humble enough to allow those who come after us to use their own skill sets and their own creativity to breathe new life into what we've been doing, shaping and forming it for their culture and their time. And we should be thrilled when a missionary is able to leave a site and entrust the people there with the ministry. Instead of worrying about how this will look or how it will change, we should just rejoice in the diverse nature of our expanding church and the awesomeness and the beauty and the power of the Holy Spirit that covers it all. See, what we're talking about here is simple. It's discipleship. And it's important, and not just the Christian walk, but the human experience. Jesus' legacy of leaving was not at all defined by brokenness. It was defined by grace and mercy, by faith, by truth, and by love. And man, as straightforward as that is, we all have stories to attest to just how hard it is to hand off our ministry to others. Because you see, that's harder. It's a lot easier just to do your own thing, have your own vision and dreams, and expect everyone around you to snap too. It's harder to present your efforts to others and allow them to speak into it, to change it, to criticize it, maybe even scariest of all, to make it better. I grew up in this small town in Ohio, and high school football there was the thing to do. And just like a lot of small town programs, we had traditions, and our tradition was called Senior Hit Day. And it's basically exactly what you'd think. At the beginning of the season, a senior would choose a freshman, and those two would be on this collision course for the last practice of the year, where the seniors and the freshmen would line up, and the senior would basically get a 20-yard dash straight at this freshman who wasn't allowed to move. And I know that seems incredibly dangerous, and I wish I could tell you why it's actually not at all, but I'm still bound to secrecy. Since I played all 4 years, I got to see this tradition from both sides, the scared to death freshman and the scary senior. And when I was a freshman, Andy chose me. And he spent the entire season preparing me for senior hit day with shoulder bumps in the hallway and intimidating words after practice. And it wasn't that Andy didn't like me. I think, in fact, that he did. It was clear through Andy's actions, man, that he loved high school football. He had poured his life into it. He handled senior hit day the way he did because he'd come to a time where he just wasn't sure if he was ready or flat out just didn't want to let it go. See, his time was drawing to a close, and what that meant for him was having to say, here's what I've done here. It's not perfect. It's the best that I could do. Now it's time for you to take it and to make it your own. When I was a senior, I chose Phil, and I liked Phil from the very beginning because he reminded me so much of myself when I was a freshman. And Phil was a fantastic football player. In fact, I knew that he would go on to be a much greater football player than I had ever been. I realize now that I shared more than just my football experience with Phil. I shared my life. I gave him this clear picture of what I'd done with my time there. It wasn't perfect by any means. It was the best that I could do, and now it was time for Phil to take it and make it his own. See, it wasn't that I wasn't sad. It's just that I'd realized something. It didn't matter whether I was ready or not. We as humans, we aren't built for staying put. We're built for moving on. So knowing that, the best that I could do was prepare Phil for his time by filling that rite of passage with grace and mercy and truth and love, so that my legacy of leaving wouldn't be one defined by brokenness. It might look a little bit like Jesus's, though I don't know that Jesus would have ever participated in Senior Hit Day. See, there's something else that all the gospel books have in common, and that's the story of a man named John the Baptist. And John the Baptist, just like Jesus, his coming had been prophesied, but his purpose was very specific. It was to make a path for the Messiah. So the day comes, and John the Baptist baptizes Jesus, basically marking the beginning of Jesus' ministry and the end of his own. And later, when Jesus is out teaching and healing, word comes from John the Baptist, who's now in prison. He says, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" I don't know that there's any question in all of the Bible that captures the difficulty in this idea more. John isn't stupid, man. He knows the hands to which he's fallen captive, and he knows he's probably going to die. He just wants to know that his business will be taken care of after he's gone. And what Jesus could have done was simply given him that, and just told him not to worry. And he does do that, but he does it in a way that points John towards the bigger picture. This story that's now unfolding in this man, who may not look or sound the way that John the Baptist expected or maybe even wanted, but was no less the Messiah, the one for whom he was making a path, the legacy that he would leave. And now it was time for him to let it go. And that's a tough pill to swallow, but what we learn through this story is that leaving a legacy, handing off our ministries, it's not just some nice idea, but a vital practice for those who want to truly participate in the mission of God. Your living mission is to understand that when Jesus said what he did about those who would come after him, about doing even greater things, he was talking about you. Now that is a legacy. Your living mission is to do likewise by participating in creating missions and ministries that are built for change, that are built for growth, ministries that are fortified to experience death and rebirth. Your living mission is to practice Christ-like discipleship, so that by humbling yourself, you can take joy in the act of passing off your ministry to those who will come after you, those who will be empowered to do even greater things than you could have ever imagined or dreamed yourself. Your living mission is to pray for change. Your living mission is to partner with God in the restoration of this world. Your living mission is to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God.
Legacy of leaving. There's a story here about Larry and Addie Garman, and they're retired Nazarene missionaries, and they served for 45 years in Peru. And Larry went to Peru originally as a doctor. He was going to be a full-time doctor, and he was a layman. He had no, you know, all his training was in the medical field and not in any kind of pastoral or anything like that areas. But once he got there, he ended up with many more responsibilities than he ever imagined could be possible. And so he used this as an opportunity to train and disciple the indigenous people in Peru and train them to take over so that he wouldn't have to do all these things. He didn't have time to fill all these roles. And so, as soon as there was a role to fill, he'd get somebody trained to get them moved in there, and he would move out. And now Peru has three indigenous districts, and it is just amazing what has happened there. But it's been a long, hard journey. And Larry Garman was in Peru last October for a pastor's retreat, and he was just amazed even at what has been going on since he left and handed over that, and he moved on. He left. But now the leadership is completely indigenous, and the church is thriving and doing fantastic. But it was a very long, hard road to get to that point. They started in 1965, Larry and Addie, and when they got there, there were no churches. There was one tiny little Sunday school that was meeting because a missionary who had been there previously had worked and worked and worked, and they built it up to one small Sunday school. In the very beginning, it was incredibly difficult to work in Peru because there weren't a lot of roads, and all the people were very isolated and spread out, and so it was just very difficult to minister to this far-flung people. And the missionaries there, they planted the seeds. They planted lots and lots of seeds in the beginning, but they never really saw the harvest. All of their efforts, all of their work culminated in this small Sunday school class that was there when Larry and Addie got there. And they have a quote here. The original missionary, for those of you who might have worked in the caravan program or, went through it yourselves, the pioneer missionary was Esther Carson Winans, and there's different caravan awards and things like that, and we read a book about her and so forth. But there's a quote here from her. It says, "It looks as though we have come to sow so that those who come later might reap. And that really struck me. It looks as though we have come to sow so that those who come later might reap. You know, a lot of times we do things in our lives because we want to reap. We want to be the harvester. You know, we want to be the ones that stand back and say, look what I did. This is great, you know. And sometimes it's really, really hard to plant seeds and walk away and let somebody else do the harvesting. You know, the human part of us says, well, that's not fair. You know, that those of you with kids, you know, you've heard this many times. You know, that's not fair. I did all the work and they get all the credit. That's not fair. That's not right. And yet that's how God's kingdom sometimes works. And the person who sows a seed is blessed, and the person who harvests is blessed, and the person who waters in between is blessed. There's all different kind of phases that, you know, a project might have to go through. And each person at each point is important and needed and necessary. So that just really struck me. We have come to sow so that others might later reap. When you work, are you doing it for the long-term view, or are you doing it for here and now, for what you can claim? Hopefully you have God's vision. So anyway, back to Larry and Addie. They said, we started planting churches on the tributaries of the upper Amazon, and the people there had no experience in a church service. They had no idea how to conduct it. They you know, church was a foreign concept to these indigenous people. And so they started with the very, very basics. And again, the churches were isolated and spread out, and so one person couldn't minister to all of these churches. And so supervising them and trying to organize and run and maintain all of these churches that are spread out like this was really a challenge. And so what they immediately moved in and did was trained leaders at each church, because they couldn't be at all these places at one time. But if they could train local people and reproduce themselves, they could. And so as fast as possible, they would get people trained. They would put them in charge of congregations. They would emphasize Bible training and stewardship and personal responsibility. And then they would walk away. And they'd say, okay, go for it. We'll be back next month. And that was the only way that they could build up all these churches, was just to reproduce themselves through these local leaders. And Larry was, as a missionary, you know, when you go into God's field, you go with a plan, and you watch your plan just like instantly fly out the window. It's amazing, because God always has a different plan. So he went as a doctor, and he did. He was a full-time doctor, but he also served in just about every capacity imaginable on the mission field. And so he would go in and, you know, he'd have to learn something, and then he'd train somebody else to do it, and then he was needed over here, and he'd learn it, and he'd train somebody else to do it, and then he was needed over there, and he's just bouncing from place to place to place, and as soon as he gets somebody to take over for him, God has another job somewhere else, because that's the way God works. But he found himself as a district superintendent of the Amazon District. He was the director of the Bible Institute for a while. And, you know, in between all these other things, he was the doctor at the clinic. And so he was just everywhere, very, very busy man, but constantly training and mentoring the indigenous people to take over. That was his job right from the beginning, and he knew that and he saw that. His job was not to move in and stay. His job was to move in and get out as soon as possible so he could go somewhere else and do something else. And so it was just this constant bouncing from job to job, task to task, place to place, as he trained new people and got them in there. And in order to do this, that means he had to trust the people that he was training. These Peruvian people that he was handing these churches and these responsibilities over to, he had to trust them. And that's hard, because they probably did it a little bit differently than how he would have done it. Or, you know, they might have done it, you know, whatever. And when you have to take your hands off of something and just say, okay, I'm out of here, that's not easy. And yet that's what he did over and over and over. He entrusted people to take care of churches, because he was overwhelmed in his own responsibilities, and that was the only way to get the job done and to do it thoroughly and well and in a way that was pleasing to God. And there were a lot of times, especially in the beginning, when he was very disappointed And there were a lot of failures, and there were a lot of mistakes, and there were things that happened that would be very frustrating. But on the other hand, the leaders quickly learned. Mistakes were overcome, and they got past the failures. And the indigenous people realized that if their churches were going to flourish and do well, they had to take responsibility for them. And when they were given that freedom to be in control and to be in charge, and they were filled with God's Spirit, they did well and they thrived. Larry was able to just let them function on their own, to let them struggle. Do you ever watch your kids struggle with something, younger ones that you know or whatever, and you watch them struggle and part of you is so tempted just to jump in and fix it because you know how it should be done. But if you do that, they don't learn. Sometimes you just got to watch your kids make mistakes and learn from them, and you do them a better service by allowing them to learn than if you just go jumping in constantly trying to fix everything. One of my favorite examples of this was there was a gentleman, when I was a kid, there was a gentleman at our house, and he didn't have kids, and he's like one of these perfectionist, clean, neat, tidy, type of people. I don't grasp those kind of people, but they're out there. And he's watching, he and my dad are watching this boy who's just all boy, rolling in the mud puddles kind of boy, This boy is climbing up to the very top of the swing set to walk across the top bar, because, boys don't swing on the swings or anything normal, they're up there. And this other guy's like, oh, we have to get him down from there, this is terrible, he's going to get hurt, and my dad says, no, he'll learn. And, it was fine. But sometimes in life, in situations that might be a little more serious than the swing set, but sometimes you just got to take your hands off and let people grow and let people learn. And it's hard. And you just want to jump in there and fix it. But sometimes you just got to back away and let them do it. And that's what Larry and Addie did. They just let the people go. They let them struggle. They let them learn. They let them develop their own churches in their own ways, in ways that worked for them. But maybe Larry and Addie wouldn't have been able to do that because they didn't know the culture. They didn't know, all the ins and outs of how things were done. And they just stood in the background and they gave support. They gave wisdom when they were asked. They gave advice when they were asked. But they kept their hands off of it. And these churches in the long run were able to thrive and do amazing things because of the freedom that they were given. These leaders just emerged in great ways, and God worked through these churches because of this approach. And now in Peru, there's three districts, and they've got the names, but they're all these Spanish Peruvian type names that I can't pronounce. But anyway, there's three districts, and if you want to see what they are, you can come and read it. But they are all completely led by indigenous leaders. We have no missionaries in this area because our missionaries left gracefully and after serving well, and they could leave proud. The other really neat thing is about 2 years ago, the Amazon district became what's called phase three in the mission field there. And this means that they are completely self-supporting. They pay all their own bills. They get no support from the church as a whole, the global church. And they give to some of the special offerings. And they are completely an independent, self-supporting church on their own two feet. And this is really an accomplishment because this is an area of the world that, economically is rather depressed and not all that successful in the world's ideas of successful. But this has been brought about by the leadership. They had vision. They saw the future, and they got there. They set goals, and they had commitment. And because of this, even though kind of the odds were all against them to become a self-sustaining church, they did it. And it's a great moment when these churches in these third world countries can become this phase three self-sustaining churches. That is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Larry says, our philosophy has always been to set the example, train the people, and then turn them loose. I like that. As they go on, you continue to train them, you encourage them, you praise them, and you watch them go at it. I really like that. You set an example, you train the people that you're working with, you teach them, and then you turn them loose, and you stand back and you watch them go. Now, when you turn them loose, that means you let go. You don't, oh, wait, nope, you know, sorry. You can reach back out and grab them. So, no, go this way. Once you turn them loose, they're gone. They can make their own mistakes. They can do things the way they want to. Maybe they've got some ideas that are better than yours, you know? And that's sometimes a hard pill to swallow, you know? You think you know best, and maybe they've got other ideas that are even better, especially in a different culture or a different generation or whatever. You know, you just let them go and watch. Make yourself available. Be in the background. Be supporting. Be praying. Make yourself available. But don't touch. Stay out of it. What a neat way to be. Neat attitude to have. And that's something all of us need to kind of strive for. And look around our lives and say, where do I need to maybe back off and leave somebody alone? And more important than that is, where do I need to be stepping up? Because this is all about mentoring. And Larry and Addie kind of spent their lives mentoring people, training them, getting them into positions where they could be the most help for the kingdom, and then stepping back and letting them go. And that's what mentorship in a lot of ways is all about. And that's what we should be doing. I don't care who you are in this congregation. There are people here in this church, in your community, wherever, in your family, that are younger than you. I guarantee it. There's people that are younger than you. And you can connect with some of these people and start a mentoring type of a relationship. And this is just a great, great thing when you can do this. I can look back in my teen years and you know, childhood and so forth, and I had some people in my life that made such a difference. I'm standing here tonight because of the mentors that God put in my life. And it was amazing. And they probably never even knew what they did. You know, it just came naturally because they were good, godly people, and that's what you do when you're a godly person. But they were these fantastic mentors, and I appreciate and value what they did for me. And I've had the privilege of kind of mentoring some other people, and that's really neat. It's a wonderful thing to just have that relationship, you know. And most of the time, the people I mentored were girls, you know, that babysat my kids or whatever, you know, and they're gone. You know, they got married, they moved away, they whatever, you know. And even though they're still a part of my life, they're not. It's not like it used to be, you know. They left because it's a legacy of leaving, and you know, new people, you know, they kind of come and go, and but I hope that I made a difference in their life. And then I prayed, you know, the whole time I was mentoring these other girls. I said, God, I don't mind doing this. This is great. But you better provide a mentor for my kids when their time comes. And now my kids are getting old enough, and God has provided a mentor for them too. And it's really funny because it's certainly not who I would have expected, and their choice in a mentor completely floored me. But I am thrilled beyond thrilled, and I'm keeping my hands off that whole situation. But God has provided a mentor for them as well. And so, look around you. You are surrounded by people that are younger than you. Who can you mentor? Who can you connect with? And the thing about mentoring is it's all about developing a relationship. This isn't just something that you know, can drop a check in the offering plate or, you know, do a one-time thing. You know, it's something that takes time. It takes a lot of time. It takes, you know, maybe if you're better with the technological stuff, it takes texting, or it takes emails, or it takes Facebook, or, you know, if you're old-fashioned like me, you know, it takes phone calls, or I did a lot of mentoring over cookie baking. You know, that's more my speed. I can handle that. But it takes time. You got to work out this relationship. You got to listen to all the trivial stuff so that you're there when the important stuff comes along. You got to just make that investment. You got to find that common ground with the people around you, and see where you can connect, and then go from there. You know, it's not like flipping on a light switch where one day you say, you know what, I'm going to mentor that person right there, and just do it. You've got to work at it. You've got to really seek God and His plan and have Him bring the people to you and connect together. And it takes a lot of effort, I guess is what I'm saying. You really have to put forth the effort. But if you're willing and you're open to the idea, it happens. God will bring you together with somebody, and it works, and it's great. And you can have this terrific influence over somebody's life. And you can pass on your wisdom, and you can pass on what you've learned so far, and you can give advice, and godly advice that maybe is desperately needed at that time. And eventually, the person that you've just poured your life into is going to leave. I guarantee it. And when they leave, that's a great thing, because they take everything that you've poured into them with them to wherever they go. And hopefully it makes a big difference in their lives. And they can pour that into the next person, into the next person, into the next person. But it takes time, it takes effort, it takes desire. Larry and Addie spent their lives mentoring people and watching them leave. But then they get to go back to Peru and see how this country that started out with one little Sunday school class now has three districts, and they're becoming self-supporting, and there's all these people and Christians and churches, and they can see everything that happened and know that they had a small part in that, and that's exciting. And hopefully we reach the point in our lives when we can look back and say, wow, you know, a lot of it we'll never know about. But there'll be a couple things here and there that maybe we'll see that God will give us some kind of little snapshots of what's going on. And we can say, wow, I had a part of that. That's exciting. And then when we get to heaven, it'll be really exciting. But for right now, will you look around? Will you pray and ask God who you need to connect with? What can you do? Because all of you have skills, all of you have interests, all of you have, you know, what it takes to be a mentor. And we just look around and see who's in your life and what people you can influence and work at building some kind of a relationship with them. I know a lot of you are already doing this, but if you're not, you need to do it because it's a wonderful thing. And it's the best way to pass on the wisdom of God and to bring people closer to God through your example and your life and what you've learned. So that's my challenge, I guess, for you tonight. Just look around. What can you do to build God's kingdom in the people around you? What relationships can you build so that eventually those people will leave and take that with them? So think about that. Let's close with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, I thank you again for all of your blessings, God, for this group of people, for the ability that we have to gather together. And God, we live in this country where we can just spread your word freely, and so often we don't, and we really let you down. And God, I pray that you would help us to look around, to see people with your eyes, and to love people with your love. And God, may we build relationships with one another. And God, may we especially reach out to the people who are younger than us and mentor them and show them your love through our lives, God. And Lord, we know, as we read even the New Testament and we see how Jesus just poured his life into the people around him. God, may we use that as an example and live our lives to reach those around us. And God, give us the strength we need to do that. Give us the patience. Give us the wisdom. It requires so much and so much effort from us. But God, it is so worth it to please you and to show how much we love you by these actions that we can take. And God, so I just ask that you would speak to each person here and show them what their task should be in this area. I ask these things in your name. Amen. You are dismissed. Thank you so much for coming.